Retronauts is part of the HyperX Podcast Network. Find us and more great shows at podcast.hyperx.com. This week on Retronauts, we demand amnesty for the Squeak Squad. Hello, everybody. We're back for another installment of our Kirby retrospective. I am your host for this one, Bob Mackey. And of course, this is another episode of Retronauts. Like our last Kirby episodes, this one is once again sponsored by one of our top tier patrons, Andrew Oliveira. And this time around, we're covering where the series was kind of had its ups and downs throughout the 2000s. We're going to be discussing a few remakes, a few outsourced games and animated series. Before I begin, who is here with us today? I said your name up front, but who is the patron who sponsored this episode?
That'd be me, Megaton patron Andrew Oliveira.
Welcome back to the show, Andrew. This has been a very fun series, although I had to play another game, another Kirby game I really didn't like for this one, but I will forgive you because I played some other very, very good ones outside of that. Who is our UK correspondent?
Hello, I'm Stuart Jupp, and I'm happy that we've escaped from the NES and N64 games and have moved on to the Game Boy Advance.
Yes, Kirby is where he belongs in the world of portable gaming. And who do we have on the line? One of our returning guests. You have not been on the show for a few years now.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm Callie Plaguey. I have been all over the place in games media, but I'm now at Polygon.
Awesome. And Callie, you have not been on any of our Kirby episodes. Can you talk a bit about your history with the character and the games?
Yeah, I still have my Kirby's Dream Land cartridge. So I started very early and I played a lot of Crystal Shards, as many of us did. I was a big handheld gamer in this era, so I'm excited to talk about these games. And I recently 100%ed Forgotten Land, which was a big achievement for me because that was super hard for some reason.
Yeah, I'm kind of still on world two of that game because I want to get every extra challenge in every world and all the bonus hat challenges, or all the bonus power-up challenges. And yeah, some of those are harder than things in Elden Ring.
Yeah, I switched from Elden Ring thinking this is going to be a great palate cleanser. Like, I'm going to have such a relaxing time. And then the bosses were actually super hard. And to 100% it, you have to beat every boss without taking any damage, which I somehow achieved. Oh. But I really enjoyed it. I also was definitely that girlfriend who played Kirby in Smash, to everyone's chagrin. Forgot to add that part.
So Callie is more than qualified to be on this episode. And by the way, just to note to our listeners, I'm recording this from my own place. I normally record at Henry's. I can't do that today. But because of that, you may hear a secret fifth guest on the show, and that's my parrot, Louie. I'm going to try to mute myself when I'm not talking, but you may hear him babbling on in the background or squeaking from time to time. I apologize. It's a not ideal setup, but it should be fine. He just whistled to let you know he's here. So let's move on into our first item on the discussion here. And it is not a game, but I'm glad Andrew included this because it's a very important part of Kirby history that I was frankly too old to watch. And I was kind of bitter that they made it so late. It is an anime series. It's called Kirby Right Back At Ya. I don't like the title of the series. I'll get into why soon. But does anyone have experience with this this cartoon that it ran in Japan, of course, but also it ran on Fox as well, Saturday mornings?
No.
I also did not watch this.
A resounding no.
I had to look at it. I didn't like the 3D looking kind of ugly CGI stuff in it. I didn't like any of the voices. They were all very kind of for kids voices. Nothing wrong with the voice actors, by the way, except for that one. But I just didn't really care for it. It just wasn't what Kirby was to me, you know? But it was probably fine. I don't know.
I wasn't sure if Callie, you're a bit younger than me, Callie. I wasn't sure if you were of the right age group to be watching this when it aired on TV. Maybe you're a little older for this.
I think I was slightly too old. Maybe not. I watched a lot of cartoons. I did not watch this, though. My boyfriend did, though, and he's always singing the theme song. So I watched the theme song intro, and I had the same reaction where I was like, this is real for kids. And the CGI of DDD was particularly not to my liking. But Escargoon is an inspired localization. I will say that. Good job on that one.
Yeah, they make some creative choices. Andrew, what's your experience with this anime? You included it, as part of the discussion. I don't know if you are pro Kirby Right Back At You or anti Kirby Right Back At You. What is your opinion on this series?
I think the general consensus, of just being too old for it, it was definitely geared towards kids. And even though it was done by the 4Kids group that usually butchers everything, I don't think there was much to butcher with this Kirby anime. I remember it airing and being excited that, something video game related was going to be on TV. And I remember watching it and thinking, this is not what I like. And then just moving on. And the mix of traditional animation with the CG makes the Berserk 2016 series look good.
Yeah, it does look incredibly dated. I think at the time, I was 20 when this started airing in America, by the way. I think my main takeaway was that I was bitter that seemingly a much better video game cartoon was on when I was too old to be watching it. Because when I was a kid, it was the era of video game cartoons being very bad for the most part. The Super Mario Brothers Super Show and Captain N the Game Master and things like that. This seemed at least to be of a slightly higher level, a little more creative, not as phoned in, but you're right, Andrew. There are some really weird choices in terms of like 3D, like polygonal graphics. Like for some reason, Kirby is a 3D element in this 2D show, which I guess kind of makes sense if he was the only element that was 3D. But also Day-Day-Day and Escargoon, the like villain characters, they're mostly 3D, but sometimes they're not. I feel like they were just using the show to experiment with that technology, and they weren't really concerned with how well it integrated with the actual show.
I had looked at it a few times, just like on and off bits, and what I mostly remember from it is Kirby was kind of the sidekick of these two yellow characters. And one of them was just moaning all the time and just telling him not to do adventures and just to behave. And I was just like, this is a bummer. Like, just let Kirby blunder into adventure like he always does. He doesn't need agency. He just needs to have his strawberry shortcake stolen by a mouse. This isn't necessary.
That wasn't for me. They didn't want to Sakurai, the creator of Kirby, he didn't want Kirby to talk too much, even in the games, because he doesn't want Kirby to have a typecast personality. He wants the player to just, have their own vision of Kirby. So the one setback in the series for the writers is, okay, the main character, the star of the show, he can't talk. So because of that, they have to create these two nobodies you've never heard of who have not been in any games. I don't think they even put them in games after this anime came out. And a lot of people saw that as a violation of the world of Kirby. Like, who are these two losers that are kind of like hogging the spotlight? I'm here to see Kirby.
Well, they don't look like anything in the Kirby universe either. They look too humanoid, and they're living with Cappies, which Cappies are part of the Kirby universe, but they just stick out like sore thumbs.
Wasn't DDD beholden to a human, like, executive-looking character with, like, a kind of a quiff haircut, or am I imagining that? It was like Complex from the Bakugo Hair cartoon. It was like a big TV that he would get shouted at by.
It was sort of like Day-Day-Day was I was actually skimming through some of these, but it seems like he was the guy who was getting kind of screwed over by a corporation who was selling him things to, dispatch
right.
Kirby. So
the monsters,
In the American version, he's more of a like a used car salesman type, but I guess in the Japanese version, he is a like a very polite kind of salesman stereotype.
I took it as like, if Wile E. Coyote was calling the Acme company, and this is the kind of guy on the other end, him into stupid things to, sell him.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. And they made a lot of this for an anime. So it ran for 100 episodes. It ran from 2001, 2003 in Japan, 2002 to 2006 United States. I believe it ended up not finishing its run on TV in the US. I was looking online, and apparently you had to buy a DVD to get the last three episodes, and they were kind of put together into a movie, which was the style at the time, like having a direct-to-DVD movie-style experience, except they kind of had to create one out of existing TV episodes.
Yeah, that's a really long run for an anime. I mean, we think of a lot of anime, the ones that are really prominent, especially in the US at the time, being very long-running, but as far as anime goes in general, 100 episodes plus is a lot. And for a video game adaptation as well, it's like surprising that it had that much longevity.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, go ahead, Stuart.
I was just saying, I was trying to think if there was any kind of equivalent. The only thing I could think of was Sonic X, but I don't think even that got 100. Maybe when it came back, it got another, they got up to 100, but that was a pretty long running TV, localized anime, video game anime.
Yeah, I mean, most anime series are, I mean, nowadays I feel like it's 12 episodes, 26 mm-hmm. if you're lucky, and then things like One Piece and Detective Conan are like 1,000. But those are the outliers. But yeah, Kirby is sitting at a hefty 100, and it looks like they localized almost all of it. So this is all available. And if you go on YouTube, people have just uploaded it there, both the Japanese version. Somebody, even though this is being localized officially by 4Kids, somebody subtitled the entire thing. You can watch that all on YouTube. If you want to, if your life is needing that right now, if we have another quarantine, I think that could be someone's goal, to sit down and watch all 100 episodes, and you tell us how they're different. But yeah, some of the people behind this have interesting histories, like you know, Masahiro Sakurai. He is you know, putting down some guidelines, like Kirby doesn't talk, you know, don't give him too defined of personality, things like that. But the director is someone who has a lot of history, and he was working back in anime when things like Astro Boy were being made. In fact, he was working on Astro Boy, and the name is Soji Yoshikawa. And he's basically an old timer at this point in the early aughts, but this is kind of the last thing he does. But he worked on things like, I guess his first directing credit was the first Lupin the Third movie. So the one before Castle of Cagliostro, which is the one, the only one anyone ever talks about for good reason. But that's how far back he goes in terms of anime history.
But he had to move on from those things to reach his true masterpiece, which is Kirby right back at you.
That's how I want to go out, writing. And like, he was doing a lot of writing, so he's writing 100 Kirby episodes, or at least overseeing that process. And if you were, you know, watching the Saturday morning block, was known as Fox Box at the time. If you were watching that, or if you were just aware of the 4Kids, you know, empire, you would recognize a lot of these voices from things like Slayers. And like, there was just this group of New York dub actors who were kind of in everything around that time, from the late 90s to the early aughts. For me, they're the Slayers actors, but for a lot of people, they're the original Pokemon actors from the original 4Kids run. And they make some really weird choices. For some reason, King Dedede, like, I think he has been defined as a penguin, although earlier materials call him an eagle. But whoever was writing this localization was like, oh, he's Foghorn Leghorn. And his sidekick is basically Paul Lind. So they're having fun on this dub.
Someone's always basically Paul Lind in these localized kids anime. That is, like in Samurai Pizza Cats, they've got basically Paul Lind in there as well. It seems very common. I think that D&D as Foghorn Leghorn is kind of inspired, to be honest. I have to say, I'm very much in favor of that.
I mean, it kind of comes out of nowhere, and you're like, I guess this is what you chose this guy to sound like for 100 episodes? Okay, sure. Congrats for your creativity.
In my head, that's the voice I hear when I think about CDDs, so good work to them.
It's interesting that Nintendo normally doesn't allow their properties to be turned into anime. This feels like one of the few outliers, and whenever it happens, it's usually with a side character or a B-level character. There hasn't not been a Mario anime after the initial things they made in the 80s. There was never a Zelda anime. I'm surprised there hasn't been a Fire Emblem anime outside of the one OVA they made in the 90s. There are all these things they could adapt now, but they are still like extremely selective. I think because a lot of these properties were mishandled originally when they were adapted.
No. There was an F-Zero anime, wasn't there? That got localized as well, I think.
That's right. I totally forgot
about that. I forgot about that until just now.
That was also the early aughts, so I feel like that was the last time they were really interested in something like this. And now they're like, well, we're going to work with the people who make Minions for our Mario thing. We're not going to do cheap TV thing.
Chris Pratt as Mario, that's sure to be a winner. That's Jesus.
We went right to the Minions people and Chris Pratt. Now, these are smart choices. Yeah.
What world are we living in where the Sonic movie is more appealing than the Mario movie?
It's pretty crazy. I mean, we're going to be talking about it, I guess, next year, because it got pushed to April, but that will be a podcast, and I will force myself to watch it for the sake of my job. But I hope Chris Pratt does a good job. Are there any other final thoughts on this? I mean, I feel like everyone in this room was all too old for this, maybe if you're a listener and you're, let's see, 30, you could be around the right age to have seen this, 30 or younger, I'm guessing, because this was like an early aughts show for people like 10 and under.
There's going to be someone in the comments who's just like, how dare you dismiss Kirby right back at you as a formative anime for me.
Kirby, well, I think this is a good example of, like, you know, people want a Zelda anime or show, but they want them to Link to be silent. And I think this is a good example of you can't really do that, because in this case, they kind of babyfy Kirby too much. And it's either going to go that route or, like, they're going to seem like, you know, the main character is a complete invalid and incapable of, you know, functioning in that world. So, you know, a silent protagonist is really, I don't think, the way to go with Zelda. And it definitely wasn't really the way to go with Kirby, or at least to babyfy him the way they did.
I feel like if they had a Zelda anime and he didn't talk, it would be like, well, here's Link's two new friends to join him on his adventures. And they'll be filling in most of the empty air here. We can move on, though, to our next an actual game on this list, and it's the first of a couple of remakes we'll be talking about, and that is Kirby Nightmare in Dreamland. And HAL is kicking off the aughts, not with a new game, but with a remake, because the story goes, the Kirby anime is in its second year, and HAL is like, oh no, we don't have a new game to sell, and we really need one, and we don't have time to actually make an entire new Kirby game from scratch. So this was a compromise. Like, Sakurai, apparently, he didn't want to do a GBA port of an existing Game Boy Advance game because the Game Boy Advance was lacking in buttons, and also he wasn't sure if people of that era would care about seeing Super Nintendo graphics of that vintage on the Game Boy Advance. So the compromise was, let's remake the best Kirby game, one of the best Kirby games, in a better graphical style and kind of fine-tune things for the expectations of gamers of the early aughts. And that's essentially the story behind this. And this decade is really HAL, I wouldn't say being hands-off with Kirby, but I will say that they can't be as focused because the aughts are really when Super Smash Brothers is taking off. And we've seen how tired Sakurai looks in every video where he's showing off something new. At this point onward, it is consuming his life. And he'll, like I said in the last podcast, he'll be working on these games after he dies, I think.
Poor guy.
Great.
Any thoughts on this? But, like, I'm going to come off on this podcast as kind of surly because I was a surly person in my early 20s during this era. But I was kind of miffed by all of these remakes in this era. And having played this on the Wii U, I'm like, oh no, this is actually really good. But I didn't have $30 to spend on a game I had played a lot already. But I think this is a good remake.
I don't think it's a good remake. I really hate it, to be honest. But I didn't want to be super negative, but I don't see that there's anything they've done to the game that makes it better. I don't like the new graphics. They've removed nuance from the NES game. They've removed interesting effects from the NES game that were once cool and now just a normal thing. They've removed, like, logic from the NES game, so there's stuff just floating in the air now that makes no sense anymore. It's just there because they've replaced it with this random green or something. It's I don't really care for it. I don't really see any reason to play it when the NES game, well, I suppose it wasn't freely available, to be fair, but I would just always choose the NES game over this. This is just, I mean, it's fine, it's perfectly playable, it's just a not as good version of the game. Like, all the sub games are boring and take forever now compared to the originals, which were like 5 seconds long and awesome. I guess the multiplayer is good, but nah, not for me, not this one. It's just a bit of a misfire for me, unfortunately.
Yeah, I will say, I think you're right about something, Stuart, that it's not the ideal way to play this game. And I feel like the ideal way to play it is probably the 3DS port, because if you go back play the NES game, you forget how much slowdown there is. You forget how much the NES is buckling under the weight of that game and everything it's trying to do. And While I do enjoy this remake, you are correct. It's lacking in some ways, and that's because it was made in a hurry. It was made to have something to sell. There was no creative drive behind it. It's like, we have an anime on the air. We need a product attached to it.
Like I say, I don't think it's horrible. It's perfectly playable. I'm just being a bit fussy, basically. You know how it is.
Eliminate clutter and embrace the freedom of HyperX wireless gaming gear for PC and console. Power through all the great monthly PlayStation Plus games with the Cloud Stinger Core Wireless for PlayStation. Enjoy lightweight comfort with reliable wireless freedom, so you won't miss plot points when you head to the fridge. High-quality HyperX wireless products can be found at most fine retailers, as well as online at Target, Best Buy, and Amazon. Or you can shop for them directly at HyperX.com and HP.com.
Yeah, I think even visually you can tell that it was kind of not the first choice of something to release. Because I feel like, I mean, throughout these games that we're going to talk about, Kirby looks very similar. You start out with Nightmare in Dreamland, though, and the backgrounds almost don't fully match the way Kirby looks. And I found that kind of jarring. But I mean, that doesn't make it unplayable or anything, but that's the thing I noticed was just like, huh, they made Kirby look this way, and like the style of everything else almost doesn't go or something.
I think you're right. The NES game has a consistent visual style. And in this one, it's like, well, Kirby and the enemies look like how they should, but what if we made the backgrounds really pretty, but not of the same like kind of graphical style or art style as Kirby and his friends and his enemies around him?
I think the extra, you know, Meta Nightmare mode is a cool addition for people that have played through the original. You know, and they also added extra mode as a separate thing, so you can play through the game with only half the life.
Yeah.
So, you know, those kinds of considerations at least help with the replayability for people that have played Adventure, but people that are expecting something, you know, substantially different will be disappointed, like you all are.
This was the first time you could play as Meta Knight, wasn't it? Because I don't think Smash Bros. Brawl was even out yet. I might be wrong on that. It might be something I'm missing, but... yeah, that was a cool mode. And that went forward in the series as well. There was, after this, they usually included some kind of mode like this where you would play as another character and you played through basically the whole game in one huge chunk, which is what Meta Nightmare was. I don't recall if you unlock anything for doing it, but yeah, it was a kind of a cool extra way to play the game. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, you can't save during it either, so you better hope those batteries last.
Yeah, that's a really good point in adding a harder mode, because... you know, a lot of the, like, part of it adds decreased difficulty, but adding a harder mode does help with replayability a lot. I also think, you know, this is the beginning of the Kirby looking angry cover art. And that was definitely a marketing choice for North America. And I think that kind of reflects, like, we got to market this to a new demographic. So I don't know if maybe the intent was for people who hadn't played Adventure to get this, or if it was they were really thinking about returning players, but I think the angry eyes artwork says a lot about this guy's pink and round and cute. We gotta try to expand our audience a little bit.
It just makes me wonder. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Stuart.
Oh, I was just gonna say this was Full Tilt Edgelord era, wasn't it? So yeah.
Yeah, this was the new metal era for Kirby. And it just makes you wonder who would not buy this game unless those angry eyebrows were there. I want to know who that kind of person is.
I love to imagine that. This guy looking at the gray skin. It looks okay, but he just seems so happy.
Well, it's weird in contrast to the anime we just talked about, because he's so babyfied in the anime. Now they're trying to make him look cool. And it's like, choose one avenue, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Kirby's a badass anyway. When he uses the needle power, all the needles stick out of his flesh. It's disgusting.
Yeah, when you really think about Kirby and you interrogate what he's doing, it's like this guy's doing the most. I don't think he's a baby, but he looks baby.
Yeah.
So I guess I understand the, like, don't worry, he looks like a baby, but he could really do some damage.
Let's get Kirby away with everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could he kill me without even blinking? Yes. Do I want to kiss him? Yes. Both things are true.
It's the best of both worlds. And it's interesting about this game that, like, Miyamoto was pushing Sakurai to do multiplayer in his Kirby games. And Kirby cracks something before the Mario series does, and that's four-player simultaneous mm-hmm. gameplay. I don't know if anybody on this podcast has played this game or the next one with that setup, but it was something they worked really hard to make happen. It almost didn't come together. The guy who was tasked with doing it didn't want to do it, but they did this technology, and the only issue was like, oh, well, the game was built for one Kirby, and the enemy placement is built for one Kirby, so you're going to steamroll this even faster with four people. But because they came up with the technology to sync up four people in one game, they really took advantage of that in the next game. Did anyone ever play this game with that kind of connection, with that kind of like functionality?
I did not have friends at this period of time, so no.
Okay. That was a problem for me with a lot of multiplayer games. And then the online era was like, oh, these random people who I can mute, they're my friends.
Yeah.
I think I played it on an emulator when that functionality was added, but it was quickly abandoned when it became clear that Kirby's Adventure is incredibly easy, and with the second player, it's horrendously easy and not really that much fun.
We talked about the Meta Knight mode, and that would really start a trend in these games that I really like. Mm-hmm. Although it kind of started in the first game where, you know, you finish the first game and there's a slightly harder adventure. From this game onwards, they usually find a way where after you finish the game, it's like you play as a different character who is mostly like a melee character or is different than Kirby in some way. Like in Triple Deluxe, when you beat the game as Kirby, you play a different mode as Day-Day-Day, and that's really cool. There's even a mode like that in Star Allies. I haven't finished the newest Kirby, but I don't know if there's something like that, but I have to assume that there's some other kind of play style that makes the game harder after you finish the game.
I can confirm there is it's not the same as this sort of thing, but there is a like hard version of the levels in mm-hmm. the spirit of other Kirby games that I found
without
challenging.
Without spoiling it, it's a twist on the usual take, and it's really, really cool. Like, awesome. I really enjoyed it. It was better than the main game for me, and I enjoyed the main game. So, yeah.
Yeah, that does feel like a very Japanese design sense to me that has gone back for at least 20 years, where you get an ending, and it's like, well, that's kind of like, you can stop there if you want, but there's actually another back half of the game if you want to keep playing. And
Kirby,
I love that.
Kirby is really good at giving you a sort of the capacity to make your own challenge if you want to, essentially, which I really appreciate.
I agree.
And I got to say before, because I've got to mention it because it's just too good, that mode in Triple Deluxe that you mentioned is called DDD Tour, which is just mwah.
Yes.
F-kissed.
Beautiful.
How good is that?
Yeah, usually the puns are on point with all of these Kirby games. A few other things about this. Again, made to just be a product on the shelves to, you know, go along with an anime. And they had a few more ambitious things in mind, but they had to cut them due to lack of space and time. There were new abilities that were implemented into other games. Apparently, the assets exist. There was going to be original dance sprites for every version of Kirby, like every copy ability version of Kirby, but they had to take those out due to space issues. So that's something they had to cut. And again, not the ideal way to play Kirby. It was a fun little like gimmick in the early 2000s, like a prettier Kirby on the go. But again, the 3DS port is the ideal way to go, and there are so many ways to play this game now that this seems like the least essential way to play it, although it's still available. Unless we have anything else to say, we can move on to Kirby and the Amazing Mirror. Now, this is where people in the comments will get mad at me because I was a big Crystal Shards hater, and I'm also an Amazing Mirror hater because I'm not a fan of anything this game does, although I do appreciate its ambition. Before I badmouth this game, does anybody actually like this game on this podcast?
Yeah, I kind of like it, but I also think it sucks. Is that weird? Like, I think everything it does structurally is an absolute hot mess. I think it's a disastrous attempt at a Metroidvania, but I really like it for some reason. It just, all the components are just so fun. It's just the way they're threaded together sucks so badly that it drags the whole thing down. The map makes no sense. It's impossible to follow. Even when you've got it completely done, it's useless. And it's always one-way doors that you can't then go and find where you need to go. It doesn't give you any kind of indication of, hey, you need to go to this place. There's no one talking to you, giving you a mission. It's completely free and open. And that's kind of cool. I kind of dig that. I guess when you're playing with four players, you'd all be off in different places saying, hey, come this way, go here. But by myself, which let's face it, is the way most people are going to play it now, it's a real slog. And there's at least one part of the game where you need to have four Kirby's sucking at the same time, and that's really hard to do when you're playing single player because the AI will not play ball. But sorry, I'm not going to go on and on, but yeah. No, I really like this game a lot. I think it's a lot of fun, but I also think it's horrible. I would recommend it just for the kind of, I don't know, if you're stubborn enough to stick with it, if you find that you get bored, I would just stop. Basically, that's my advice. Don't bang your head against it, because it's not going to get any easier. From beginning to end, it's a nightmare to get around in. Basically, it's really frustrating.
I played about 4 hours of it before I had to tap out. But to explain the premise to our listeners, it's essentially an open world Metroidvania style game. And this was back when we got a Metroidvania every 20 months instead of like five a week. So this was a special game at the time, which I think is why people really liked it, because, you know, there was Symphony of the Night and like Shantae and then not much else. So you had to accept what you got. And this was one of them. And yeah, like, it's an open world with many objectives. You're not given a lot of guidance. The level design doesn't really guide you in that way either. And the ideal way to play this game, and this concept is really cool, is that it's an open world game in which four people can play at once and explore at once. And you can kind of call each other into certain places, like, oh, I found something. And you can like use a little Kirby cell phone to call in your friends. But the thing is, like, I think the game was tested this way at HAL, and people really like playing it in focus tests. But then the ideal, like, the reality is, rather, that you're going to be playing this alone. And while you're playing it alone, there are three other Kirbys controlled by the CPU exploring. And when you run into them, it's like, where were you? What were you doing? You're not helping me. Because they essentially don't do anything except help you attack bosses. So it is kind of frustrating that when you're playing alone, there are CPU Kirbys exploring, but they're not helping you or finding anything in any way. It's a really frustrating game.
I think the Smash ability is cool, though. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. I just like that as somebody who played a lot of Smash around this time. I just think that's neat. So there's that. I also think the cell phone is just very of its time as a feature, which I find charming. Yeah. Just including like, and it looks like a Nokia brick in the game too. And I really like details like that, because I think it kind of gives the game a sense of place or a sense of time, I guess. But yeah, it's one of those where if you didn't have friends, like I didn't, kind of difficult to really get into.
Andrew, what do you think about this one?
Over the past year or so, I've picked it up and put it down a couple of times, just trying and just bouncing off every time. And, you know, this last time in prep for this podcast, I tried to, you know, really critique what is wrong with it. And, you know, Stuart hit up on a lot of, you know, issues like the one-way doors, which in this type of game is just unforgivable, you know, and the terrible AI. But I noticed that also it seems like it doesn't matter how you get hit. Any single hit will make you drop your power up. And that is just awful.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how they do it in other Kirby games, whether it's a percentage or, you know, how much damage is done or whatever. But it's definitely not every single hit where in this game it feels like it. And the enemy spawns are too instantaneous. It reminded me of Ninja Gaiden back in the day when, you know, a screen would just be off a little bit and then it would shift over and the enemy would instantly spawn and attack you again. And the map is just completely incomprehensible.
Yeah.
It might be the worst map in any game I've ever played.
Can I jump in and just quickly say the Mega Man ZX map might be worse, but that's
Oh, okay. Thanks. Note to self, never play those games.
Advance okay, but don't play ZX. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, when I found a single path connecting two worlds, and then realizing that there's actually two paths that bring you to two different sections of your destination, but that wasn't illustrated on the map, I'm just like, okay, I'm done. Like,
yeah. It might be worth mentioning that the mission is to find and beat all the bosses, basically, because then you get these mirror shards, and once you've got all of them, you can go through the mirror on the main hub, and that takes you to the final boss. But as you said, there is literally no guidance. Nobody says where they are. You just have to find your own way to everything. And while that's kind of cool, it's also kind of un-Kirby, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say the goal is more to find the map, because...
Yeah.
I mean... For people who haven't played, the best example I can give to the map is, you know, unless you have the map item, you can't see anything. It's essentially like a constellation without any connected lines, you know, like you would do in school. You'd like connect the dots.
God, I'd actually forgotten about that completely.
It's just dots. And then when you get the map, it kind of fills in a bit more, but it's still incomprehensible. Still makes sense.
Can I? One thing I do want to praise about this game, and this is kind of a spoiler, so don't listen if you don't want a spoiler. The final boss is kind of cool in the sense that the sheer excess of it is absurd. I think you fight it about 6 times in about 5 different forms. Like, it just keeps coming back and keeps coming back. And in the end, the final phase is a shmup, and during the fight, the credits start rolling. And there's something kind of epic about that.
That is great.
I really like that. It's almost worth watching that on YouTube, the final boss, just to see how cool it is. I'm not sure what the lore implications are, because it's called, I think, Dark Mind. But we'll worry about the lore on the dedicated 4-hour Kirby lore episode.
There's a surprising amount. I forget who said that this doesn't feel like a Kirby game, like not an ideal Kirby experience, but you're right. Like when I was playing, not to restate everyone else's thoughts, but yeah, the maps are really bad. It's not clear. Like, it's basically a map... is like it just shows you like a series of nodes connected with like lines, and you're not sure like which door will actually send you to the node you want to go to. So it's a lot of trial and error. A lot of one-way doors will force you to play through several levels again just to get back to the point where you needed to go through another door. And it's very, very frustrating. And I found myself just pausing constantly to look at the map. And that's not like Kirby games should be just very, not incredibly easy, but just like, you know, fast paced. You're pushing through everything. You should not be pausing every 5 seconds to be like, okay, all right, I need to go down and then left. All right, okay, where will this door bring me? Oh, crap. Okay, now I have to go back to the level warp doors and then find my way back to level 2. And then, yeah, it's way too complicated.
It really is a case as well of if you take a wrong turn, you're punished so severely by going through a one-way door that requires you to play through like a game's length of rooms to get back to where you were. It's just like, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of old Spectrum games where it's worse than dying because you have to just play through it again for no actual legitimate reason. If it was like linear stages where you die and you went, oh, okay, I guess I've got to do that again, it would be fine. But as it is, you just find yourself in that stupid forest level over and over again for hours doing the same little short rooms. And they never change. You never get any resources that you can use to make it easier. You're just playing normal Kirby levels that happen to be an absolute hit horrific nightmare of navigation for no real good reason. So anyway, yeah, it's pretty good. I recommend it. Genuinely, my advice is give it a go, and if you start getting annoyed and hate it, just stop immediately, don't persevere, because you will not find it gets any better. But some people will like this, I think.
I mean, I was playing this on Wii U, and it has save states, and I know a game is really testing my patience when I'm getting frustrated even with save states. Mm-hmm. And that was my experience with this one. And it does feel a bit like they were taking off of the Great Cave Offensive from Kirby Superstar, like that kind of approach, like expanding upon it. But I think if they were to remake this game today or do a different version of it, you could have a really fun... even online 4-player Metroidvania experience, and they could, you know, they could do this with the hindsight of all the other style of these games that have come out. They could work on this with all of the other games in mind that have come out in this style in the past 20 years. But I feel like they didn't really know what they were doing here, and they were working in a genre subtype that they weren't very familiar with. So that's why we have this game the way it is. And also, like we said before, most people will not be able to play this in the ideal way. So it feels like this maybe could have been like a Game Boy Advance to GameCube Link game. Like that could have been like the ideal version of this. But yeah, then there'd have to be like four of those instead of three. And Nintendo really wanted to cut bait early on that thing.
I'd be interested to see like what the 2022-2023 version of this would be, because I think with a lot of the, like you said, Bob, like just looking at games in this style, learning from that, it could be really interesting. Like I'd love to see it feel more like Kirby instead of being kind of overwrought and complicated in a way that you don't expect a Kirby game to be. But not an easy one to get into, unfortunately.
Yeah, things have changed so much. Now on the Nintendo eShop, there is a Metroidvania section. And I think like everyone lost their minds when this when Forgotten World was announced. It's like, okay, the first truly 3D world Kirby game. I think people would lose their minds if you announced like, all right, we're making a Kirby Metroidvania and it's going to be really good this time. I think that would be a big move for Kirby. Andrew, sorry.
I see, and that's where I don't think you can really even call this a Metroidvania, because it's just that butchered. You know, there isn't any point in the game where I felt like, you know, I knew I could come back here later. It's not like there was like a platform too high that I couldn't reach, or a certain colored door that I couldn't go through that I needed something for. It was just, let me, you know, come through this section of the map. And, you know, half of it is barricaded back with this one-way bomb wall, and I don't know how to get to the other side, and there's no clues telling me how. I just kind of wander until I get there magically, you know?
Yeah, it really is only a Metroidvania in the loose sense of the term. It's like, I think the one thing that does it is like, okay, there's a contiguous world, and there are things to find in it, and that's kind of as far as it goes. Like, the loosest definition of that term, but because there were so few at the time, and that this was the time in which that term was like being invented, it was applied to this one, because it's like, all right, we got five of these, and this can be one of them too.
And I don't think we mentioned either that this was one of the ones that was outsourced, Flagship.
That's right, Flagship and Dimps. Dimps did a lot of outsourcing. I'm more familiar with their work on the Sonic Advance games. Maybe Stuart, I assume you've played those.
Of course, yes, I've played them to death.
I'm not a Sonic fan, but I don't like the Sonic Advance games.
Why? They're good. You should like them, Bob.
I don't know why I don't like them. Ones.
Like the Sonic Advance games, please. It's all I ask of you.
I'll do what I can. If they're ever made available again, I'll give another shot. But yeah, Flagship...
It's difficult. Sorry, with Dimps, it's difficult to know whether or not it's their fault because when their games go wrong, because they seem to do pretty solid work, but then... I don't know, I think Sega might be getting in the way of sticking it raw in, but that's not really the point of this podcast, so I'll just drop it completely.
Yeah, Dimps did a lot of outsourcing. Flagship was working with Capcom a lot. Flagship has done really good work. Flagship did the two really good Zelda Oracle of Ages and Seasons games. Those games are really good. I'm waiting on the remakes for those. I really hope that's happening. And Flagship develops the next Kirby game, which I really, really like. So... I don't know like where this went wrong, but I feel like you know, their heart was in the right place for this ambitious style of game, but the execution wasn't where it needed to be, really. And I really wanted to find that Smash ability. I was like, I hate this game. I don't want to play any more of it, but I got to find that Smash ability. I never did after like 4 or 5 hours of playing this game.
I think you can only get it from Master Hand and Crazy Hand, who are in his bosses.
Okay, well, that's never going to happen to me. but yes, I apologize if you enjoyed this one. I'm honestly want to know if anyone has played this game in its ideal form. Like it's the year 2004. You're sitting with three friends and you're working through this big game together. That sounds like a blast, but as it stands, playing alone is just like so frustrating and tedious.
I just want to say it's cool that the fighter ability has some Capcom influence to it, because with the fighting ability, you can throw little Hadoukens and do like a little whirlwind kick. And I think that's a nice little touch.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that. Kirby, 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 that's a name you should know. Kirby, 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 he's the star of the show. He's more than you think, he's got maximum pink. Kirby, Kirby, Kirby's the one. He comes right back at ya. He comes right back at ya. Give it all that you got. Take your very best shot. Send it right back at ya for sure. Yeah. How can
can I help you, King DDD?
I need a monster to claw with a dare Kirby.
That's what we do best at NME.
You better get it with a money-back guarantee.
Us. We're the Spirit Hunters, and we're a show that treats Hunter x Hunter and Yu Hakusho's author as the center of the universe. Some weeks we do linguistic analysis. The Chinese meaning of this character is to smelt or refine, but to the changed meaning in Japanese it means to temper. Other times, we get absolutely smashed.
So we take one shot every time. Yusuke uses the ray gun.
1 hour later.
This is the least coherent episode.
I think your pirate is haunted.
Check us out at the HyperX Podcast Network.
Podcast and not enough deep dives into your favorite superheroes. One podcast stands as a shining beacon in a world of pain and darkness.
Yeah, darkness. Yeah, lots of darkness. Bunch of dark stuff. Superhero stuff you should know. That's us.
Andrew, why are you talking like that? I'm the movie voice guy now.
I'm the new movie voice guy, and it's time for you to listen to superhero stuff you should know.
So we have like unused concept art, unmade scripts, unmade superhero movies. All check us out at Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
Ben, you should do a movie voice guy voice. Guy voice.
I would, but I think we're out of time. Superhero Stuff You Should Know, part of the HyperX Podcast Network.
Part of the HyperX Podcast Network.
I just said that.
Capcom would eventually absorb Flagship, and Flagship actually makes our the next game on our list here, Kirby Squeak Squad. And by the way, like I think so far all of these have been available in different digital platforms. Like I believe, so let's see, the last one was Amazing Mirror. Yeah, that's on 3DS and Wii U Virtual Console, and this next one is on Wii U Virtual Console, so you can still play these today. For now. But yes, Flagship.
Was it one of the ambassador games for the 3DS?
Is this one of the ambassador games?
I don't think you can buy it on the. I don't think it was on the eShop. I don't think there are any GBA games on the eShop. So it must have been an ambassador game or something.
Yeah, I think. I think the last one was an ambassador game. Right. Cool. There are no 3DS games on the eShop for the 3DS. You can play. On the Wii U, you can play GBA and DS games, but you could never do that on the GBA for some very...
Being very pedantic.
Yes. No, that's okay. Just if anyone wants to play these, most of them are still available in some way. Kirby Squeak Squad, developed by Flagship. This is their last game before they are absorbed by Capcom in 2007. And I am disappointed in myself. When this game came out, I was like, ugh. I didn't like Amazing Mirror. I didn't really care about that 2002 remake. I think I'm done with Kirby for a while. So I didn't even play this one. And after playing it now, I'm like, oh, this game rules. And it feels like other Kirby games made after this are kind of patterned after what this does right. And I really like this one.
It's not a popular one. I didn't used to like it very much because I had this kind of... Oh, this is just a Kirby game. There's nothing that makes this kind of stand out in any way. It's just kind of the basic Kirby levels that are really short for some reason. And then now, years later, this is like what I want Kirby games to be like. I'm just like picking it up and I'm just like, hell yeah, straight left to right, let's go, finish the level, give me some treasure chests, I've unlocked some weird stuff. Awesome. I'm mixing up the what's it called? Powers in his stomach. That's really cool. But it's also kind of underused. But I dig this game. I think that the complaints about it are kind of valid, which is just that it doesn't do anything new at all, pretty much. But it's still a fun game to play. It's a nice kind of breezy Kirby game, which the last one wasn't, so it's a bit like a breath of fresh air in that respect.
Yeah, and I like the like copy ability and you know, item management in the belt. Like it's something like maybe at the time I would have considered like, oh, that's not utilizing the touch screen in a way that I would have liked. But looking like now looking back on it, I mean, that adds an element that, you know, a little element of strategy to an otherwise very straightforward Kirby game, gives you a little something to do on the side, which I like as an idea. I don't know if I think, like you said, it's a bit underused, but having to combine things, getting like a one up out of that so you can fit another thing in the belly occasionally, like that, I think that's a clever way to kind of add another dimension to it when the rest of the game is so simple.
Yeah, it's there's occasion in the late game, there's like the odd treasure chest that you'll need to use some kind of strategy for, but mostly it's pretty easy, and that's not a bad thing. Easy is fine. Like, like it when a game is breezy. Like a breezy, easy game is fine by me.
After playing a few of the later games recently, it does feel like the secrets are patterned after how they work here, where it doesn't take too much effort to get them. Sometimes it's just like, oh, next time I'll take the right door instead of the left door. I compare that to the secrets in past games. They make it a lot more intuitive here. And I think like at the time I was probably like, oh yeah, another Kirby game, roll my eyes. But I skipped Star Allies and Triple Deluxe because, who cares? A Kirby game. I played these before. I played them recently, like in the past few months. I was like, oh, these are great. It's like another Kirby game. That's exactly what I want. And I even like the fun deviations, like Forgotten World. It's like, okay, I can do one of these too, but I'm always into getting back to regular Kirby. Andrew, any thoughts on this one?
It's not bad. It's definitely not as bad as Amazing Mirror. I hate the fact that all the abilities that are introduced are not very good. And they even brought back High Jump, which is just a question mark ability in general. But
I love the fact that they...
of course you do, Stuart. You love everything that's terrible.
I love it.
But the bubble ability in particular grinds my gears because the bubble ability encapsulates enemies to save their ability for later. And I feel like having an ability to just facilitate your gimmick on the touchscreen is very disheartening.
Yeah, that has pretty limited use, the bubble ability, because we didn't explain it very well, but the way this game works, there's limited touchscreen functionality in that the bottom screen is Kirby's stomach, and you turn into other abilities like normal in other Kirby games, but sometimes an ability will be in a bubble and you can swallow that ability and then you can just touch the bubble to activate it. You can also swallow things like health power-ups, but there are usually three treasures in every stage, and you need to carry those in your belly to the end of the level. And because of that, you only usually have two or three slots by the end of any given stage because you're escorting these treasures to the end.
I did like the introduction of the little mouse characters. You know, they try and prevent you from getting the treasures and whatnot. They're not really that difficult to deal with, but it adds a lot of character to the game.
I'm very fond of the plot of this game, such as it is. Because to me, this kind of exemplifies what I like my Kirby to be, which is he's just this entity that doesn't really care about anything except his desserts. And when his snacks are some way interfered with, it's like Kirby's sitting there and it's like, I don't know, oh, the Lord of Nightmares is tearing Dreamworld apart and he's just like, whatever. And then someone steals his shortcake and he's just like, right, I guess I've got to destroy the world now. I gotta go out and everything on my way has gotta die.
Yeah, there's kind of
like all these mice.
Like the first level sets up kind of a dark moment in the series that made me laugh, where it's like, Kirby, the setup is the game is like, oh yeah, Kirby's hanging out, he's about to eat a shortcake, it disappears, and he's like, well, I'll go beat up King Dedede, he must have done it. And it turns out he didn't, but you still beat him up. that is like the framing device of the entire first set of worlds. It's like, well, Day-Day-Day is innocent. And in fact, I mean, over time, he becomes more of like a friend and a helper. But boy, he really gets punked out in this game. And he's not even in the last game. So poor Day-Day-Day. He didn't do anything this time. He was clearly innocent.
Wow.
But we talked about, I mean, the game is called Squeak Squad. And they are the new set of villains because Day-Day-Day, I mean, he's incapacitated after you beat him up in the end of the first world. And so you escort these chests towards the end of the stage. Usually there's a bigger chest at the end of the stage. And once you get to that, that is when there is sort of like a boss fight, but not really, that appears. Because once you get to that chest, That's when the Squeak Squad shows up. It's usually one bigger character and a bunch of little ones. Most of the time you can run from them, but sometimes they make you fight them. They're not too hard, but it adds just a little bit of fun stress to the end of every level where if they bump into you, they can steal your treasures, and then they run off to the little hideouts. And then if you fight them in there, it's much more difficult than if you fight them out in the open levels. These, surprisingly, there's only like three or four of these boss characters, but it doesn't really get too repetitive. I liked fighting them, and I guess the pro tip is you just keep setting them on fire, and they're very easy to kill that way. Or incapacitate, but I was like, oh, this is a neat idea, and I don't know why I'm not getting bored of it, but I'm not.
It's nice. I mean, because they're quite, again, quite breezy, it's nice that they just keep that presence in the story such as it is. They're always around. They're not just like an afterthought, which is kind of cool.
And Andrew was mentioning some of the new abilities or returning abilities. I was playing through this recently. I didn't like the Cupid or Angel ability. I just felt like it was a little too slow and pokey. Are there any other ones you didn't care for, Andrew, in this list? I mean, there are new ones like Animal that I thought were pretty cool. It's also very adorable. And I guess we have neglected to say just how great all these sprites look, even in the games I don't like. Like, every sprite is beautiful in all of these games so far. There's the bubble ability we mentioned before. There's the ghost ability. The metal ability is like a superpowered version of the stone ability, where you're just basically a Terminator marching around and just destroying everything that touches you.
Kind of cool. That's kind of cool, I have to say.
I mean, it's on brand. They stole his desserts. He went full Terminator on
it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think the animal ability is probably the standout one, simply because it can dig, and there's not enough games that let you dig, like Super Mario Bros. 2 style dig. Let's do more digging in games. Steamroll dig was awesome.
That's the only one they brought back in. It's in the new game, isn't it? Or version?
It is. Yeah. It's. Yeah. I think they call it Drill in Forgotten Land, but yeah, it's the same sort of thing. Yeah. You can dig in certain terrain. And it's fun there, too.
I was a big fan of the digging in this game. It is fun to do in any game, and the animal costume is neat. Also, again, it's a, like Kirby in like a furry outfit, and that's really, really adorable.
Don't put that into people's minds, please.
It's a, hey, there's nothing sexual about it. If you don't put that on Kirby, he's pure and innocent. But yeah, like I there's not too much more to say about this one. I just think that I didn't give it the time of day because it's like, oh, and it's outsourced too, which to me was like, oh, that's a warning sign. HAL didn't make this. I don't really care. And I forgot to mention in the last game, that's the last Sakurai involvement really with the series, because like we said before, Sakurai is like waist deep in Smash Brothers, the series he's attached to forever. Sometimes he's allowed to make something else like Kid Icarus, but that's what he'll be doing forever. And as far as I know, no real involvement in the rest of these, although I'm sure like he comes to a meeting now and then and gives feedback, but I'm sure he's busy enough as it is.
Well, I think around this time too, he was working on Kirby's Air Ride.
That's right. And by the way, we're going to be doing all of the side Kirby games in a different podcast. And that is the one I have never played, and I'm always so curious about it.
Oh man, you're missing out.
I just sold my copy on eBay. Again, for lots and lots of money.
I'm sure it is worth money. The game that everyone made fun of on message boards constantly is probably now worth $1,000.
Oh my god, my copy was a horrible mess. It had like, it didn't have the original case or anything. It was really messed up, and I stuck it on eBay and it just went immediately. Like after 2 seconds it was being sold. It was crazy.
Wow.
People really want to have Air Ride.
I will try to find some way to play it. So let's move on to the final game on our list, and this was unavailable after its original release, and this is a very expensive game now, and I must thank my wife, who has her own copy she lent me, so thank you to Nina for lending me this copy to play. It's still in good condition, don't worry, but this is Kirby Superstar Ultra. And this is another one I skipped originally because it was the late aughts. I was in grad school. And I had no money, and I could easily emulate Kirby Superstar if I wanted to. And so that's exactly why I never played this. And going back into it for the first time, for this podcast, I was like, oh, this is actually, I wouldn't say a low effort remake, but they didn't do a ton, though it's a very good game in a new format with some extras, and I would say inoffensive. What does everybody else feel about this one?
If I can briefly give some advice on this game being so expensive, which it is, if you buy a Japanese copy, it's very much cheaper, and also you do not need to read any of the text in this game, really. It's the same game, just that's my advice for collectors. I don't know if you want to get a copy.
They did not add like a visual novel component to this Kirby game.
They did not, no. as for the actual game, I mean, God, what can you say? It's one of the best Kirby games, just with more stuff in it, you know? And the stuff they've added, while it's not, I would say, amazing, it's pretty formative for what the series was going to become in the next few games. Like, there's stuff here that has appeared in basically every game after this. This is like the beginning of modern Kirby for me. Well, not modern, because now he's 3D, but you know what I mean. Like, Return to Dreamland, Robobot, Triple Deluxe, this is the beginning of that.
There's a reason for that story, and that's because of Shinya Kumazaki.
Mm. Was he the director from this point out of the Kirby games, Andrew?
For all the best ones, yes.
Well, he did a great job, because this game's awesome, and so are all the subsequent ones that they directed. I mean, the new stuff is essentially mostly reduxes of stuff that was already in the game. It's not super brand new. It's like a hard version of Spring Breeze, a hard version of the whole game kind of thing. But it does include stuff like the enhanced True Arena, which is a very modern-ish Kirby thing to do, which is basically hard, like EX versions of all the bosses, plus then a new boss or an enhanced version of a boss. And I want to say this was the first game that had Galactonite in it, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah, it is the introduction of Galactonite, and Shinya really seems to actually care about the lore beyond, you know, Kirby's dessert getting stolen, mm-hmm. you know, fight God type scenario. In the subsequent games, we'll probably touch on a bit about how the lore is sort of embedded into the games. And in this game in particular, you know, not to go out of order, but the Meta Knight Ultra, where it's Meta Knight's story, it's kind of like a bridged run through of, you know, the main game's a superstar. You fight Galactonite at the end because, you know, the Clockwork Nova, you know, he can grant a wish, and instead of to Marks, he grants it to Meta Knight to fight the strongest in the galaxy, and that is Galactonite. And Galactonite is one of four legendary heroes in the Kirby lore, and this is where it, like, first introduces this.
He's so cool. I love it.
But it's weird because the extra games and this aren't really technically canon, but this is where sort of canonicity starts with that sort of like through line.
I love the best thing about Kirby lore is that you can completely ignore it and it doesn't matter. But if you care about it, there are things that happen that are just genuinely like, oh my god, it, like final episode of some Netflix thing where they pull the rug out from under you. I don't know, there's some crazy stuff even in what's the new game called again? Forgotten Land. There's stuff towards the end that just had me just going, yes, awesome. This is so cool.
It does sneak up on you. I was playing some of the later ones recently, and getting to the final bosses, you realize like, oh, they put all the story in here. There's like suddenly dialogue and drama, mm-hmm. when before you were like eating candy and like going down water slides.
Yeah, they kind of pack it into the back half the same way they do with difficulty, where it's like, okay, there's a breezy game here, and then you get into like, if you're really into this, there's a lot to explore after the first part of this game is over, and that includes like some crazy star universe like stuff that I don't fully understand, but I enjoy.
It's like, if we ever do talk about them, it's just like there's a scene in Robobot that's extremely exciting if you care about continuity, that sort of thing. It's a really nice, it's like fan service, I'd say, in a way. It's just a really cool like nod. I mean, even this game, Kirby Superstar Ultra, has some stuff like that, like the as noted here by Andrew, the airship boss Kabula from Kirby's Dream Land shows up in this one again. For the first time in, God, would have been how many years? At least nearly 20. Not quite 20, I would say. I don't know if Kirby was 20 by this point. But there's just so much there to enjoy. I think it's just a great version of a great game. I really can't fault it. The graphics have been improved as well, so I think it looks nicer.
I was gonna say I didn't play this one at the time, and obviously it's hard to get now. But to do my homework for the podcast, I watched gameplay on YouTube because that was the best I could do, and I was really struck by how much better the like world graphics are compared to even Squeak Squad. Like, there's a big jump from the first games we talked about on this handheld era to Superstar Ultra, which I think looks more cohesive. I think the backgrounds match the really good sprite work a lot better than some of the previous ones. And I was just surprised at like the jump from Squeak Squad to Superstar Ultra in like 2 years in terms of the art style. So I was really struck by that.
I don't mean this as a kind of, you know, lazy devs kind of criticism, because that's stupid. But Nightmare in Dreamland and Amazing Mirror and Squeak Squad, they all use the same Kirby sprite, I believe, and enemy sprites are all in common. I mean, that makes perfect sense. I don't blame them. But then for this one, rather than do that in their remake, they've actually seemed to have redrawn the SNES version sprites and shaded them and added more animation frames to them and stuff. And it's just a really, really gorgeous looking game.
Unless I'm mistaken, is this the last 2D Kirby game? Because we won't have another one for 3 years. Oh, wait, no, Mass Attack. So that I think that is the last one. Yeah.
I'm not sure if that counts as a side game or not, but yeah, there is Mass Attack.
Yeah, that's so we're coming up on the end of this era of like very, very pretty sprites. For like for every series, not just this one.
The like refreshed sprite work, I mean, all of it just makes it feel like the ultra version of Superstar. Like I just think it's really well done, like souped up version that looks beautiful. And I do like, you know, you get a lot of added you know, difficult stuff, which I always like in Kirby. So I kind of want to take your advice, Stuart, and get the Japanese version and try it out. Because
I can't promise that it's not now become absurdly expensive, but when I found it, it wasn't. Was it worth noting they also made Wham Bam Rock not racist in this one? Is that, or at least less racist, which is, you know.
That's good.
Which character?
There's a boss called Wham Bam Rock in the original game that's a sort of blackface looking thing. It's like the black background with big red lips and big round right wild eyes, and it really looks a bit kind of questionable Bob Clampett kind of.
Yeah, the imagery
They've toned it down quite a lot, so it looks less racist, which is you know, worth applause.
That's always a plus. I mean, it's a shame this game is very hard to find. And I mean, this is just another argument for another podcast, but DS games are really, I mean, if you want to download them, they're plentiful there if you want to emulate them, but there's no like really legal way to play a lot of these, and things are only going to get more expensive as we go further ahead in time. And this should be made available in some way. Like, I hope
absolutely agree.
Nintendo finds some way to do that. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I don't get why they did. I just don't get why they. I mean, they released Mass Attack, they released Squeak Squad and Canvas Curse, I think, on the Wii U, but they skipped this one.
Yeah, maybe it's because Superstar was already on the eShop. I mean, it's not a good reason.
But then you could get Nightmare in Dreamland and Kirby's Adventure, so God knows what they were.
Yeah.
Well, Nintendo, you screwed up.
I will say
if on the Wii U, maybe it would have succeeded. But
only they should listen to us on this podcast, we have all the right advice for them. That's what I think.
Yeah. Maybe now that you've mentioned it, it will get re-released. That seems to be the Retronauts way.
Yes. We've had a lot of luck recently with timing, so maybe that'll happen.
The best one was when we did the Doctor Who episode, and the instant we finished it, they announced the Doctor Who game. That was really cool.
I think the new Beavis and Butthead trailer came out the day before our podcast came out, so that was really good timing, too.
Awesome.
I think it's important that you mentioned, you know, this game in comparison to the previous three that we talked about, because that engine that was based on Kirby's Adventure it really looks dated in comparison to this one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think we mentioned it all, but, you know, the previous three games being based on the Adventure Engine, there were no, you know, moves you could perform with the abilities that you got. There were no co-op, like helper-style co-op. It's very much night and day, between the two engines.
I think it may be worth mentioning briefly, and if it's not, feel free to cut it out. One of the reasons Squeak Squad got a short shrift is because Canvas Curse predated it, and that had all new shaded, redrawn everything. And then it was a little bit like, oh, what? We're back to this again. We're back to this Game Boy Advance looking thing again. And of course, nowadays we're happy to see it, but back then I think there was a kind of an overreaction to the fact that they went from this very popular, very good refresh of the whole Kirby thing in Canvas Curse into just here's Kirby's Adventure again, a kind of, I guess. But I mean, I don't know, I just thought it might be worth mentioning because there was that backlash.
No, I think that's an important point to point out. And also, HAL designed this game. It's not an outsourced game. I'm surprised it's not, but HAL did put this together. It wasn't like a zero effort, production, but HAL was making Super Smash Brothers Brawl. And I believe there was 7 years between Smash Brothers Melee and Brawl. So Brawl was like a massive undertaking. If you were around during the production of that, you probably remember like the website that would have new like information every day or every week, all of the big things going on behind the scenes. Like it was their biggest game that they would work on. And then they'd work on even bigger ones with the 4 and Ultimate. So yeah, HAL is very busy right now. And I feel like they must have expanded to be able to work on huge Smash Brothers things and also big Kirby games at the same time without outsourcing. Although it feels like 20 different developers also work on Smash Brothers with HAL.
Want to dive into each of the different modes or
sure I wasn't sure about this, Andrew. When I started playing this game, it felt like more things were locked down at first. Is that true, or am I misremembering the original Superstar?
I want to say it was the same. I honestly, when I replayed it for this, I just went into my 100% save file and started doing the extra stuff. So
one thing about the I want to talk about before we get into the gameplay, we talked about the graphics and how good they look. The one big downgrade is the 3D cutscenes are replacing the sprite art cutscenes, and I'm sure it was very fun to see at the time, but in 2022, in the cold light of 2022, they are very low res and not, you know, great looking CG cutscenes, and that's all I've got to say. That's the only big downgrade there, just to fit with the style of the time.
Yes, I was struck by that watching it on YouTube, and part of me was like, I wonder how much better it looked on the DS screen, because it looks real rough. And then I was, now that you mentioned it, I'm like, oh, it probably didn't look that good on the DS screen either.
No, I was playing it on my 3DS. I was playing it on my 3DS screen, and it looks pretty bad. Like a really bad video codec, too. Oof.
It's better than the Metroid Dread ones, where it took up both screens and it just had a weird cut in between.
Yeah, at least it's limited to just the one screen on the DS. Andrew, do you want to walk us through the gameplay modes and how they're different from the original Superstar?
Well, in addition to all the ones on Superstar, there's Revenge of the King, which is a revamped version of Spring Breeze, which nobody liked Spring Breeze on the original. It was too easy, too short. I mean, it's not extremely expanded upon here. Like Stuart mentioned, they added the Kabula boss fight, which is actually now a side-scrolling shooter in the vein of fighting the heart in Milky Way Wishes. Whereas in the original game, it was just Kirby. He had eaten like a strong mint leaf or something and gave him the ability to shoot puffballs at Kabula. But it's very much like if you beat, you know, Super Mario Brothers 1, the first time, and you go back through and all the Goombas are Buzzy Beetles and whatnot. So, like, you know, it's Spring Breeze, but all the enemies are harder. The colors are more purpley. Actually, it reminded me a lot of Forgotten Land, where the second section of that game is very purpley and otherworldly, alien-like. But, you know, if Henry were here, he would be very over the moon about the changes to the King DDD boss fight, where it's now an electrified steel cage match.
Oh, okay. And, wow.
Yeah, it got pretty intense.
So I guess it was like a boxing ring before. Was it always a wrestling ring?
I think it was always a wrestling ring. He's always kind of slamming down on you or whatnot. And this just kind of sealed it home, where you can't even fly too high. You get hit by the electric cage, and he's got like the steel mask and his fancy metallic hammer.
Mask DDD is cool. I really like
it. It's such a strange design. It looks like a Japanese like samurai oni mask, but without the helmet, just the mask part, and it's just strange to me.
They brought that back as well, didn't they? That was in one of the other games, I'm sure of it. At least one of the others is based on Mask DDD. I don't know, maybe I'm imagining it.
It's like anytime he's evil, he has the mask.
Yeah.
Tell you now.
Or his swell.
We'll have to tell Henry what he missed out on when he comes back at the end of this podcast after the recording.
It reuses some of the mini bosses from Adventure and, you know, the previous games that we mentioned, like the Fire Lion, the Grand Wheelie, the TikTok Clock Guy, and they look, in my opinion, really out of place. Like, they weren't designed for this, you know, 32 meg cart SNES world.
Yeah, the extra content is really cool, and this kind of, outside of the lackluster full motion video stuff, it does seem to be the ideal way to play this game because of all the new content, the improved graphics. Like, it just is a really good package, but yeah, unfortunately only available in its original release. And one thing I forgot to mention last time, we were talking about how, like, when you start the original Kirby Superstar, you see the very HAL menu with, like, just great graphic design. Like, everything has its own little icon. It's taking up like a different amount of space on the screen. And apparently I learned after the last recording that that's the work of Michiko Sakurai, which is Masahiro Sakurai's wife. She was a graphic designer at HAL, and that's how they met and got married. So it's his wife. That's the reason why these menus look the way they do. It's her signature style.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Noted wife guy, Masahiro Sakurai.
Exactly.
Well, you can see it not only in the Kirby games, but also, you know, and Smash Brothers, but also in the Kid Icarus Uprising game, a very similar menu.
Oh, yeah. That's the first thing I noticed when I started that game for the podcast last year or the year before. Just like, oh, this is a Smash Brothers-ass menu. And then when I went back to Kirby Superstar, I'm like, oh, no, it started here. This is where it all began. Any other final thoughts on this one? If you have anything else to say, Andrew, I think we covered everything, but it's such a good package, and I'm sad I missed it, but I didn't have a lot of money at the time, but the box art is really nice too. It really pops off the shelf. If you can look up the box art in front of you right now, check it out. It's very beautiful.
I think it's disappointing that the Meta Nightmare Ultra is kind of on the easier side, especially compared to Nightmare and Dreamland. They added these abilities you can do that, you know, basically the more you attack, the more you gain points, and you can spend these points on different abilities. And it just makes the whole Nightmare Ultra scenario just pathetically easy.
I guess you could, I mean, as this sounds snarky and it's really not meant to, but I guess the option is there to not use them for people who want to make their own kind of challenge in that respect. But I mean, they're there. So you're going to use them. I mean, I guess the real challenge in this game is the True Arena using certain powers there, but that's not all the levels. That's just bosses. So maybe it's not what people are kind of after. You know, I mean, I love the True Arena. The True Arena for me, increasingly, that's the game. I have so much fun in those. Like in Soul Melter EX in Kirby Star Allies, for example, which I still haven't beaten. I've beaten all the others, but never that. Because they keep bringing this back in, like, Triple Deluxe Rubber Bot. There's a version of the True Arena. They get increasingly absurd with new and more difficult super bosses to fight. It's a fantastic addition. It adds so much replay value if you get into it. But my pro tip for everyone on the first time playing it, use the stone power, because you're completely invincible when you're in stone form. Just cheat. Who cares? It's hard. It's a finder cheat. Just, you know, use stone.
It's funny you bring up the arena, because even the helper to hero mode, where it's just arena, but you're doing it as different helpers, this sort of focus on the arena, I want to enjoy it more than I do, but it just feels like so much of a grind, especially like in the most recent Forgotten Land. Like, that's pretty much where I kind of fell off, was just like throwing myself at the arena, you know, repeatedly. And it's definitely the hardest part of any Kirby game, I would say, is the arena.
Yeah.
Definitely, I never touch the arena, because there's only so much I can take, and I don't want to be mad at Kirby, which is why I stopped playing Amazing Mirror.
They usually make it so that the true arena is more or less just a bragging rights thing. You don't normally unlock a tangible new thing from beating it, so it is really just kind of, if you really want to push yourself, then you can do this. I think Star Allies might have had a tiny cosmetic change when you do beat it, but other than that, I don't know, I might be wrong. I think you can get 100% without beating it in most of the games, but I might be wrong about that.
And it's interesting that after this, Kirby takes about 4 years off from being in new games, or 5 years if you don't consider Epic Yarn to be a traditional Kirby game. So like the last new Kirby game is 2006. And then the next new Kirby game is Epic Yarn in 2010. And then we have Mass Attack and Return to Dreamland in 2011. So after this game comes out, Kirby is really on the back burner for a surprising amount of time. And until he sort of has a real resurgence in the 2010s. And I'm looking forward to talking about that on the next podcast. That's becoming my favorite era of Kirby, even though I like the older games. That, like, the 2010s are very, very kind to Kirby, and the 2020s are looking very good for Kirby as well.
I mean, we're getting into the period now, in my humble opinion, where from now on, except for that rubbish one on the Wii U, there's no bad Kirby games anymore. They just stopped making bad Kirby games. They're like, right, okay, new plan, let's only make good games now. And the dev team were like, yeah, sure. See, Louis agrees, whistling along there.
Yes, he's very happy about good Kirby games. Again, I'm sorry, Louis is like 6 feet away from me, and I've been muting a lot.
Louis's the best, don't even.
Yeah, actually, I like the Wii U game, but I wish you didn't have to look at the Wii U gamepad the entire time. There was no way. There's no way to get around that. It's like, oh, the graphics are so nice.
I was being uncharitable when I said it was rubbish. It's probably fine.
Yeah. if there was a way for me to play it and look at the TV.
I'm surprised it never came to the Switch. You know, it seemed like a real candidate for a Switch port. That would be really fun to play on the Switch, I think.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, most people forget you can actually touch the Switch screen and it will do things.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. Try it today. But for my reflections on this era are like, it's not, there are some really good games that come out of the 2000s, but it's not a great era for Kirby. I don't like Amazing Mirror. I don't like Crystal Shards. I don't think there are any big missteps after this period. I think they really figured out what kind of Kirby games to make, and they're all like very, very good after this point. So this is kind of like a real roller coaster for Kirby, and I'm glad he survived. And it's seemingly like this might have been his most popular era, because he had like an anime on TV and all these games. But I feel like I'm happy to be living in this modern era of Kirby. Any thoughts on these games of the 2000s, anyone?
I think he summed it up great. And, you know, the fact that we capped it off with Superstar Ultra, which is the beginning of you know, Shinya Kumazaki, he really took the series and ran with it, and really, he's the one that we all have to thank for Kirby being as good as it is today.
Yeah, I think you both summed it up very well. I do like that we have kind of this positive end to this story, because we started out a little rocky with this era, and, you know, it was still in the era where there were a lot of games coming out. Like, I went to GameStop and bought some real garbage DS games without realizing, you know, and so there were a lot of hit or miss things. And then finally you get to Superstar Ultra, which is a signaling kind of the upswing of Kirby. And there's a lot of Kirby games to come that I really enjoy. So yeah, he had his messy era, and now he's doing great. Proud of him for coming through.
Well,
I mean, the 2000s were bad for a lot of reasons, and Kirby was having a bad time too, so we can't, it's not all his fault. He was struggling as well.
I mean, I think that, yeah, I think while this era is kind of spotty for Kobe. I thought it was a little bit spotty for, I mean, the GBA itself, I thought was a bit kind of like, I mean, there's a lot of games I love on it, but that thing's lifespan compared to most Nintendo systems was like minimal. Mm-hmm. It felt like a stopgap to get to the DS. And then when it got to the DS, they were like, right. I mean, there are Kirby games that came out during this period that we haven't talked about, and because they're side games, so to speak. But like Canvas Curse is one of the highest rated Kirby games. People love that game. I love that game. I thought it was great. Mass Attack's really good. I'm not sure if we're talking about that next time or not, but they were trying all sorts of things and seeing what stuck. And unfortunately, that did include a remake that kind of missed the point, a Metroidvania that kind of missed the point. And at least they were trying new things, I guess, with the Metroidvania. But no, this period had to exist so that we could get to good Kirby again, like properly good Kirby, consistently good Kirby. Like the ones on the Wii I thought were fantastic games, like 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 tier amazing games that built on what Kirby Superstar Ultra started. So you need this game to get to the really good stuff. And that's not saying this is bad, but the series went to new heights on the 3DS, on the Wii, on the Switch. It just went to the moon, as far as I'm concerned. And there is no other Nintendo series that did that, except arguably Zelda with Breath of the Wild, but meh.
It's funny that you mention it, Stuart, because I feel like, as far as the platformers go, these are some of the more experimental ones. Usually they experiment with, you know, pinball or some other, you know, side type game, but this is like the mainline platformers, and they do a lot of experimentation here, and they outsource it too, which is even more weird.
Mm-hmm. Re-release Kirby Superstar Ultra, please, Nintendo. Let's go.
Yes, put out some kind of virtual console for DS, or like,
I know the GBA one is coming, and you just know they're going to stick Nightmare and Dreamland on it. Oh boy.
Or just Amazing Mirror, and it'll make us all sad. But that's the end of our podcast, folks. I'm looking forward to talking about more Kirby games. And thanks again to Andrew for sponsoring this episode, giving us the opportunity to take a slow march through all of these great and not so great games. But it's all looking up from here. And let me tell everyone out there about Retronauts. Retronauts is completely fan-supported. We're part of the HyperX Podcast Network. If you want to support our show and get these episodes 1 week ahead of time and ad-free, please go to patreon.com/retronauts. Sign up at the $3 level, you get that. But if you sign up at the $5 level, you get access to 2 full-length bonus episodes every month. We've been doing this for, I think, 2.5 years now. So you've missed 2 full-length episodes a month from the early 2020s if you have never been a patron on the $5 level. And again, that is patreon.com/retronauts. And at that level, you also get a weekly column and podcast by contributor Diamond Fight. A lot of great stuff is happening on that level. That's all the plugs. You can find us on Twitter at Retronauts. Let's go around the room here. Andrew, you're the patron who sponsored this episode. Is there anything you want to plug? Online presence? Anything you're a fan of? Anything you're working on?
No, I don't do much of anything. I did bother to log into Twitter, though, so if someone wants to message me, at Granite Gamer. But I don't tweet. I don't really go on Twitter much at all, because just too fast-paced for me. Not my thing.
It's for the best, but everyone can reach out to Andrew and say thank you for the great topic. Callie, how about you?
Well, I'm kind of in a behind-the-scenes role now, so I don't have anything specific content-wise to plug. But if I did, you could find it on Twitter at InkyDojiko, InkyDojikko. I haven't got to do that in a while on a podcast, so it's nice to be back.
Welcome back. And Stuart, how about you?
You can listen to me on Retronauts when I host my Disastrous Carnage episodes. And you can find me on Twitter at Stupacabra. As you can see, it's a very clever username there. I've changed Chupacabra to Stupacabra, because my name is Stu. Just explain that one in case anyone didn't get it.
Mine is just a Mystery Science Theater reference. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo, and of course I have other podcasts I do on the Talking Simpsons Podcast Network. It's patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. There's Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon. You probably know what those are. They're the podcasts I do about the Simpsons and different cartoons from different series. You can find that wherever you find podcasts, or go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. We've got all kinds of great stuff at the $5 level there. We've got monthly miniseries like Talking of the Hill and Talking Futurama, only for $5 patrons, only at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. That's it for us this week. We'll be right back at you next week for another episode of Retronauts, and we'll see you then.